podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Hey, good morning. This is Chris. Hope you guys can hear me. Yeah, that's right. I'm doing the car cast, or if more appropriately, the truck cast. Because I drive an old truck. You can hear my muffler's going. That's kind of a pain. I don't know. Probably won't replace that myself. I'll probably get somebody to work on it. The funny thing is that I'm actually, I have a job where you would expect me to drive some sort of Mercedes or Audi or Lexus, but I don't. I drive an old truck because I like driving an old truck. And most of the time I'm just going to the airport anyhow, so it's easy because the old truck, nobody bothers. I can leave $10 bills on the front seat and leave the windows down and the doors unlocked and nobody bothers with it. Occasionally they'll dump their trash in the bed. You know, I'll come back and I'll find people have emptied their ashtrays in the back of my truck. But other than that, you know, it's good for carrying stuff around. Fairly safe if you run into stuff. And it's got the clearance so you can get off road a little bit. Like yesterday when Brian and I were up at the Wapak, we went in some pretty gnarly washed out dirt roads and dropped some water about halfway. And so we didn't run the whole Wapak. We ran the Wapak Trail Race Course, which goes from Windblown Ski Area in New Ipswich, New Hampshire, across four mountains, and it turns around in the Watatic parking lot, and comes back across four mountains again. So we ran that. We didn't run all of it because we got lost a couple times, and Brian was flagging a little bit towards the end because he hasn't been putting in the kind of training I have. And I was pretty beat up, too, because the technical ups and downs are, you know, if you've been running on the flats or the reasonably flats, and then you get slammed into a bunch of back-to-back 1,000-foot technical ups and downs, it's a different set of muscles, and it beats up your legs. You can get hurt if you stay out too long, but I would recommend. So it's four mountains. It's New Ipswich Mountain, it's Barrett Mountain, it's Pratt Mountain, and Watatic Mountain. And you figure you're going up and down each one. And you figure, let's say they're, I don't know, let's just take a random guess. They're 1,000 feet each one of them. So that's 4,000, 8,000. So we probably did 5,000 to 6,000 feet of elevation gain in just under maybe 16 and a half, 16 miles, 17 miles, something like that. And it took us 3 hours and 45 minutes. That's the technical nature of that course. So this week, I got the week from heck, as they say, and next week, too. Next week, I'm traveling. I got a gig down in Las Vegas. I'm going to be real busy this week, so I'm going to try to get my Don Allison podcast up this morning, and it's two bits. I mean, it's pretty long, so I'm going to break it into two bits. You guys can tell me whether that's smart or not, whether you want the hour and 10-minute podcast. I'm just assuming, I'm making the assumption that I'm going to try to keep these shows under 40 minutes, because that's frankly about, you know, that's about as long as most people have when they go out running or they drive to work in the morning. You know, nobody has an hour and a half. If you do, poor you. So I'm going to keep trying to do that. But it breaks up the narrative a little bit. So you may vote and say, Chris, don't do that. So shout out to the Ultra Dad who ran his first Ultra on Saturday, and he finished. I think he ran 11 hours and something. I was looking in the results. I didn't see them, but I guess I didn't look far enough down. So I guess it was more technical than he thought it was going to be, and it took him a lot longer. But it sounds like his back hung in there okay, and he did fine. So he's an ultra guy now. Got another email last night from a guy, trail runner, I forget his name now, but I gave him a brief response. I'll respond to him more. He's running the same 50 I am in Vermont. So I got to check out that course and see just how much elevation gain and loss we have, because I may have to reassess my tactics. Other than that, I'm sore, I'm beat up, but I feel pretty good. If you want to run this Wapak trail race, it's an actual trail race, and it's real small. It's like maybe 50, 60, 70 people, and all pretty much hardcore trail guys. It's part of one of the trail series, but it's August 31st, I think, is the long weekend. But look it up, Wapak Trail Race. There's a couple of them. You want the one that's sponsored by the Squanicook River Runners, and it's a cool race. And if you're training for an ultra, even though it's a 17 and a half mile race, it really runs like a marathon plus. And the ups and downs and the technical nature of it will be great strength training for you. So it would count as an ultra long run in your schedule. I'm going to run it. And maybe I'll do a quick, 40-minute warm-up beforehand. So if you want to do that, come up with me. We'll run the Wapak. And I'll probably work a little bit, too. So there you have it. So we'll see what goes on this week. Have a great week. Get your run in.
And now for the equipment check.
Ah, what a beautiful day. Sun setting over the trees. My little puppy going for a swim. I say I stopped to let him swim, but really I stopped so I can stand around in the middle of my 10K and take a break and not feel guilty about it. But he is a cutie pie, swimming around like an alligator. If you go to my website, you can see a picture of several pictures of Buddy the Wonder Dog. This guy's out fishing over there in the shade. Beautiful day. This, half of this pond, used to live on this pond, three quarters of this pond is wooded because there's no way to build. It's too low, so it's really beautiful over here where I run. But anyhow, I wanted to revisit the topic of shoes because today I broke down and bought a couple more pairs of shoes. My ultra running training was kind of beating up these trail shoes faster than I usually go through them. So I went out and I bought them, but I didn't buy them where I usually buy them. Usually I go and buy them at a place called Roadrunner Sports, which is an internet site. It's www.roadrunnersports.com, and they're a lot of help. If you call them and get on their catalog list, they're a big help. They can tell you what to use, that sort of thing. But, if you're a new runner, just be careful. You don't need to spend $100 or $150. Just get a neutral cushion shoe. Because here's the deal with shoes. Here's why you can always get a good deal on shoes if you look around. If you look at the supply chain of Nike, the way it works, or any of these big shoe companies, they do a little forecast. They bring out a new model every year, and the new models are more for marketing than for significant changes in the shoe, for the most part. Unless they did something wrong in the previous model, then they try to fix it. But usually it's just for marketing. They're doing cosmetic changes to the shoe. And that gives them an opportunity to raise the price by $5 or $10 as well. And they wrap a bunch of marketing around it. But the way the supply chain works is they say, okay, every time we roll out a new model, we sell about 150,000 pair, and here's how the pairs, this many women, this many men, this many size 5, 6, 7, 12, double E, and they do this whole matrix, and then they just say, okay, go build these 150,000 shoes. Okay, so it's not like potato chips where somebody buys a bag and they put another bag out there. They make all this model pretty much at once, and then they push them out through their distribution network into their sales channels. So it goes out to the retail outlets. And, the forecasting is never perfect, so there's usually some shoes left over. And what happens is they get sent off to discount stores or people, the eBay people buy them or whatever. So if you're wandering around DSW or some of your favorite shoe stores, you're going to find the discount rack, the bargain rack. And you're going to, if you looked hard enough, you'd find your size and shape of the shoe. It might be last year's model, but you'd find it for half price. With the internet, you can do the same thing. Now, so if you're a person like me who knows exactly what kind of shoes you want, you wear a gel cumulus whatever. I don't care if it's a gel cumulus 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's what I wear, a size 12, medium, neutral cushion shoe. I can just go out on the internet and search on that. And, there's some risk to it. that I might be getting a used shoe or a flawed shoe, but for the most part, it's just regular, normal shoe stores that have overstock, and they're trying to get rid of them to make room for next year's push. So, you know, that's what you do once you figure out what kind of shoe you want. The shoe stores are good, and your running club is good. If you don't know what to buy, just ask them. And when in doubt, buy a middle-of-the-road neutral cushion shoe until you figure out what you need. Because if you just start running, your stride's going to change as you get in shape. And if you're just starting a training program, like training for a marathon or something, your stride's going to get much more efficient, and it's actually going to change as you go through that program. So you may end up coming out the other side of your program needing a different pair of shoes or a different type of shoe than you did going in. And what I've narrowed it down to here, I used to just wear road shoes, but I get track shoes too, which are a little lighter and have less tread on them that I wear down the track or on the treadmill for speed work and tempo work. Then I get a good pair of neutral cushion road shoes. Hope I don't have to jump in and save this dog. He seemed to give him mouth to mouth to a border collie here. And then I started trail running a lot, so I have a pair of trail shoes too, which I run in. So those are, trail shoes really make a big difference in the wintertime when there's some snow and ice and stuff to give you a better grip in the ice. So that's my my shoe monologue. So go out and get yourself a good pair of shoes. Get the cool shoes, get a cool shoe shine, like the gorillas say.
And now for our featured interview.
Right, which was my next question. What's the best recommended walk ratio? You know,
there is no best. What's whatever works for you. People have different strategies. You always hear some people say walk all the uphills and run the downhills. Works for if you're a good downhill runner and a lousy uphill runner, which that describes me pretty much. That strategy might work for you. Some people do it off of walking on a schedule, but that doesn't really work on a very hilly course.
Yeah, that's what I found, because on my home course, I have a little 10K that runs up over a ridge, so it's got the hills in it, right?
Right.
And I was doing a 20 minutes on with a 5-minute walk.
Yeah, that's better for a flatter kind of track or road loop kind of deal. But when you've got hills, you need to do what's work with the course and how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And I mean, and the thing is, you need to respect the distance, obviously, because it's a long distance, but you can't dwell on the distance. You can't be thinking about it all the time. I mean, one of the best strategies, one that I've found extremely difficult to implement just because of my mental outlook, is you run or you go from aid station to aid station. You don't worry about the race. So your goal is, okay, how do I feel at this aid station?
Yep.
Assess it. How far do they... That's one thing you hear people say. If you hung around an aid station at Ultra, you would hear that over and over and over again, if there isn't a sign there. How far to the next aid station? 3 miles, 5 miles, whatever it is, because then, okay, the runner says, I've got 5 miles. This is how I feel. What do I need to take with me? What kind of nutrition? Am I going to be okay? You know, that kind of thing. So they're really worried about getting to, and then when they get to the next aid station, they worry about getting to the next one. It kind of, that's the best strategy.
Yeah, because you're chunking it up emotionally, too.
As opposed to sitting there going, you know, it's 100 miles and I'm at 2 miles. I've got 98 miles. Your mind can't deal with that real well. So is a way of dealing with the flow, and you're going to have your ups, and it's a marathon, same thing, you have your ups and downs, and ultras are, you're going to have your good times, and you feel good, and at other times, you're going to feel lousy. Another thing that's a well-known saying in ultra running is it doesn't always get worse, which means when you are at your worst moment, and you feel like, I feel like crap, I'm going to drop out, I just can't go on. Yeah. Well, you can go on. It's not necessarily going to get worse. Maybe if you keep going and you walk a while, it'll get better.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very hard thing to learn in ultra, but it does work.
That's something I discovered so far in my training is that, you know, you get out beyond 20 some odd miles and you feel like crap. You know, you're essentially at the wall. Nothing bad is going to happen after that. Just keep running.
It can. I mean, you obviously, I've dropped out of ultras because I physically couldn't go on. I just simply couldn't. I could point where I could hardly stand up. I mean, you don't want to get yourself to that point. There are things you can do in terms of energy allocation and nutrition and pacing and one of the best things I always say to people is go volunteer at a race.
Yeah.
Work at one of the aid stations, and you'll see the way people come in, and you can pinpoint people that you can see it a mile away. The people look good, people who know what they're doing, who've got it together, as opposed to people who are just flailing away at it and don't really have a handle on what they should be doing. And if you work the aid station past mile 70 in a 100-miler, and you would say, that person looks good, that person, it would almost always be the women who look good for whatever reason, whether it's a physiological thing or a psychological thing. So my suggestion is when you're early on in your ultra, look around at some of the women who seem to know what they're doing and hang around with them because they're going to probably have good races when it's all said and done.
Yep, so it always comes back to the old saying, if you want to know how to do anything with running, go hang around with the runners.
That's right. I mean, it's
well, let me get your maybe you don't know, but let me talk to you about the training schedule here. I just downloaded a training schedule, one of those, okay, you're running your first ultra, right. Here's the training schedule. And they got me doing these back-to-back long runs on weekends, so Saturday, Sunday long runs.
Right.
And so, you know, it ramps up to like 4 hours on Saturday, 5 hours on Sunday. And these guys have a real slow pace baked into this, like a 11 or 12-minute mile. So I'm a lot faster than this. But I don't like the back-to-back runs. I would rather do one really long run and then a sort of a flush out on the Sunday.
Now, that, again, it's a very individual thing. Some people, I am in your camp. I am better doing, I've never, maybe in my youth, but not in my old age now. I never did double two workouts a day. Give me one workout, whether it's 10 minutes or 10 hours, I'm just going to do it. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well,
The same thing kind of applies to the back-to-back thing. I mean, the theory behind the back-to-back thing is the second day will tell you, train your body to how it's going to feel later. You're going to feel tight. You're going to feel sore. You're going to have to ease your way into it. You're going to have to work your way through problems. That's the strategy behind the second day deal, as opposed to where you're doing one long workout where you can, that doesn't, you're not going to, for instance, you're training for a 50-mile race. You're not going to go out and do a 50-mile training run.
Right. Well, that was my next question. What's, this is your basic 3-week wave plan, right? So, you know, medium plus and hard,
right?
Sort of for the distance. And if I'm doing the single long run on the weekend, what should my peak long run be?
I wouldn't worry too much about the distance. I'd kind of gauge it on the hours, you know what I mean? What I would do if I were you, I'd go to the results of the race you want to do, look, peruse the results, see what kind of times, come to some kind of guesstimate as to what your time might be in the ultra, and then let's say you pick out 11 hours or 10 hours.
Probably 10 hours is a good shot.
Okay, you're 10 hours in the ultra. I would say you want to go beyond 5, obviously, in your training.
Yeah, I've already done a 30 so far, and I'm two months away.
Yeah, then you're there. I mean, you don't want to overdo it. I mean, you don't want to run your ultra in training and then have burned out to the point where you get there. I never did above 30. I think I did 30 or 32 once before my first 50-miler. That's about it. You want to be fresh for the race, but, yeah, I mean, I don't think you really need to do much more beyond that. I just gauge it on the hour thing more than anything else and not worry about the pace. You want to get out there for the number. Let's say decide you're going to go out for 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah.
Just go out at a really slow pace and you want to practice in training, obviously, which you're going to do in the race, which is the whole nutrition thing.
Yep, I've been doing that.
How you're taking breaks, stopping, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So you want to get used to what you're going to what you're going to encounter when you get into the race itself as much as you can.
No, I think that's great, because the way they have it set up here with a back-to-back four-hour runs on the weekend, I think that second run just tears me up at my age. So.
Well, you probably, my suggestion, although I don't know about your training, is you're probably doing it too hard. If you looked at the not to, to, ultras are a big California thing. Yeah, I mean, the ultra whole thing really got started in California, and it's extremely popular. One, the guy who ended up buying the magazine, The Business, from me, he characterized it as, there's so many ultras in Northern California, it's like a bowling league. There's a race every week, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a lifestyle kind of thing. And so what happens when you're reading a schedule like that, okay?
Yeah.
That was probably, if I guessed, set up by someone maybe in Northern California who got together with 20 or 30 buddies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they did all these runs on the Saturday and the Sunday. So if you, let's say I plopped you down in Northern California for the second day of one of these back-to-back runs, my guess is that you would say, what the hell are these people doing? It's so slow. They'd be walking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'd be just ambling along and going really slow, and just
yeah.
It's like a social outing more than a training run, if you know what I'm saying.
All right.
You're looking at, it like
a
wow.
Marathon training.
Yeah. So that's, I don't, other than elite runners, which who knows, maybe you'll be an elite ultra runner, I don't know. But that's the way.
I don't think so.
That's the way they train. They would be capable of putting forth a really solid effort in that second day of the back-to-back, where these most of other ultra runners, it would just be kind of like, you know, you 4 hours, maybe they probably aren't.
Yeah, they're running 20 miles.
What's that?
They're running 20 miles. In
not
hours.
Even. 15,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, okay.
So,
I got it.
Yeah, it was,
so
it,
this is time on your feet as opposed to training.
And that is worth something in ultra running,
yeah.
Because even if you're not going very fast, it can be difficult just to be on your feet.
No,
and you're not hardly moving. Believe me, I've had my times where I'd gone so god-awful slow. I mean, it just, you wouldn't believe how slow I was going. I mean, just because that's the way your body
yep.
at that
yep.
particular point in time, I mean.
And the other thing they got is they got rest on Monday and Friday, but they got you actually doing tempo on Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, I mean, you know, again,
I'm not gonna do that either.
No, you need to do your own training. I mean,
yeah.
Again, I'm in throughout my run, perhaps because of the era in which I started, and I was mostly self-coached and figured things out for myself. I've never in my life followed a schedule out of a book or the internet. I never understand that mentality where you're going to do exactly what it says in the book. Well, what
right.
if you feel crappy that day? What if
yeah,
it's
exactly.
your day? What if it's pouring
yeah.
rain? What if it's snowing? What if you were up half the night before for whatever
exactly.
reason? I mean, why be a slave to the schedule? Have confidence that you can.
Yeah.
I'm probably one of the few runners in the world. Maybe there's more out there that I don't. Like I said, I've. Throughout my running career, there have been days when I've gone out to do 20 miles and done two, and I've gone out to do two and done 20. I mean,
exactly.
It's just, if you've got it that day, if things are going well, and that's the other thing is, especially when you're ultra, if you're doing a long run and you're feeling great, well, hey, maximize it.
Keep going.
Don't stop just because the schedule says to stop. Just keep on trucking. I mean, that's the
yeah.
way I look at it. If you can do it,
all right, that's exactly what I needed to hear. So I know what to do now, because this schedule is stressing me. Because I don't want to end up DNF.
Schedule should never stress you. Then it becomes counterproductive. What good
right.
is it if it's just
right.
going to make you uptight? And a schedule of any kind, training is supposed to prepare you for the race. And if it's
yeah.
not, so what if it's stressing you now? Then the race is going to stress you. So you
right.
don't want that.
Yeah, and I'm in this to have fun, not to stress
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
great. So any nutrition or you know, water tips that you learned?
I'm not a big nutrition guy. I mean, I am in this. I go with what works. I don't necessarily I'm not out of the book when it comes to that either, really. I mean, my big problem with ultras is they start real early.
Yeah.
So I never understand. I'm always fascinated by people who can wake up at 6 o'clock for a 7 o'clock ultra. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I would have to wake up at 4 for a 7 o'clock ultra because I have to eat something. I have to get things settled. I have to have my body ready to go.
Yeah.
Partially because I'm a midday runner anyway. But
yeah.
So my thing with nutrition is, it sounds too simplistic, but don't overdo it. Don't underdo it. I mean, you want to go into the kind of like ready to you're not going to be able to take in enough calories before the race in an ultra to last you through the distance, period.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to eat or drink something through the course of the race.
Sure, sure. I've been eating.
I like to have enough in my system so that the first couple hours I don't need to. I'm always amazed you get to mile 3 in an ultra and these people are pounding down the nutrition. Well, what did you, like, you know, skip breakfast? I mean, it's crazy, you know. You don't,
yeah.
Your body's not going to need anything right away if you're well, your glycogen stores are topped off and you're starting at a nice, easy pace and not burning yourself out. You should be, but then once, so you let I always let myself get a little bit hungry, not obviously depleted, but to the point where I get to an aid station and I want something. I don't have to force it down, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the other thing.
You know, I mean, what you're going to take in, again, it's all individual. I mean, some of these people do 100 milers, and all they take is the gels. That would be repulsive to me. I couldn't do it. I'm not – every now and then I can do a gel, but it just – that's – to me, I want to have something that's going to work for me. I mean, I tend to eat real food during an ultras. I tend to like salty things because that – it depends what kind of sports drink you're drinking, but if you're drinking kind of the traditional sports drink, I like the salty stuff to balance it off, and it keeps my electrolytes in decent shape, and that tends to work for me. But again, it's all very individual what you eat or drink, but you want to have something, obviously it's not going to upset your stomach, and it's going to provide enough calories that they're going to get through and that they're going to work for you. What it actually is doesn't really matter that much, as long as it's got some decent electrolytes in it, and that's the thing, and especially in hot weather, that tends to get people in trouble. The human body is designed towards equilibrium. That's what makes running ultra so hard, because really it's, you're pushing the equilibrium scale so far in terms of human body wants exercise, but not necessarily 10 or 20 hours in a row of it. So that's what makes ultras hard. And those that can sustain their equilibrium throughout the course of the ultra tend to be those that perform best. And obviously running a steady pace is going to do that, and inputting nutrition that's going to work for you is going to be, as much as you can sustain that equilibrium, and that's what gets people in trouble. They push too hard, they don't eat enough, drink enough, they eat or drink the wrong things that tend to, if you're going to have the same thing over and over and over and over and over again for 10 hours, it better be something that works for you, because if not, it's going to really cause problems for you. So, and the stomachs, everyone's individual. With some people's stomachs are very sensitive. Other people have iron guts, and they can just pour anything down there and happily trot away. So you have to find out what kind of person you are, what works for you. Again, training is the best place to find that out. And
I'm pretty good with that.
That's a big trick. I never really had too much. I've had my issues, but by and large, the nutrition part I've always been able to handle pretty decently in an ultra. And if you're talking about a 50-mile, one that 10 hours, it shouldn't come into play that it's a tremendous. I mean, the 100 miles, you're going 20, 30 hours, that changes the equation a little bit. But, I mean, you need to work with your body and mimic what you do in training.
Yeah, I shouldn't have a problem with that. One thing, I've been burning a lot of water. I'm burning like 40-plus ounces of water an hour.
You must need a lot then, you know what I mean? Some people, again, the hyponatremia thing, if you drink too much water without balancing it off of the electrolytes, you know, but if it works, if you've got the electrolytes in there and you're you're feeling okay. That's always the acid test. I mean, you know, hey, how am I feeling?
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me how many people don't, they know, oh, you know, geez, you know, the book says to take 3 goos here. Well, I feel like shit and I don't want them, but I got to take them anyway. No, you don't.
Right.
Not if that's not going to work for you. You don't need to do it. You need to take what's going to work for you. It takes time to figure it all out.
Yep. I think I'll do fine here on this race. So I'm going up to Vermont. I gotta check out the course. You know, this is the way I am. I just sign up for shit and I don't even look at the course.
You and me both. I tend to be like I have to have done that race, and it's fairly hilly. It's somewhat mountainous, but it's not it's not like the western race in the western part of the country where you're climbing these huge peaks or anything like that. But it's a test. It's a challenge. It's hard work, no doubt about it. It'll offer you a good challenge. It's a beautiful route. It's well, you
awesome.
Picked a good race to do because it's well organized. It's a nice
good aid stations.
Yeah, you got everything you need. You're not going to be lacking at that race. There's lots of other. They have a concurrent mountain bike race with hundreds of people.
And that's another thing. You know, in the old days when we used to do these kind of races, there would be, you know, the organizer would go out the night before and drop a couple of milk jugs full of water on the course. That was it.
Right. Yeah. Let me tell you, that first ultra that I told you about.
Yeah.
The race organizer, who will go unnamed just because of the story I'm about to tell, he was too cheap to pay to open the auditorium to the school at which we met. Until after the race, he got it for afterwards. But before the race, we all had to wait outside in 38, 40-degree temperatures and sit in our cars with the heaters running because there was no place to go inside. So this is in November. So it's a different ball game now. Yeah, I mean, it's most ultras. I mean, you still got your hardcore low-key races, but a race like you're talking about is well organized, well managed.
Hey, so I'll have to let you get back to work.
Yeah.
And you got a couple of races you're race directing.
Right. Well, I've always years I've done the Eastern States 20 Mile, which is always
one of my favorite races.
I appreciate it. It's an ongoing challenge every year, but it seems to be a race that people like to do because I always say once the turnout starts to really go down, then I'll reconsider it. But I keep getting a decent turnout every year, and it's a nice course. But
right.
It's a tremendous amount of work to organize since it goes through 7 towns and 3 different states and all that. But it's a good. It's always 3 weeks and a day before the Boston Marathon, so that's one.
It's always been a great race for me because if I'm training for Boston, I'm in decent shape, you know, right then.
Right.
And you just sort of practice your pacing. It's nice and flat. Runs along the ocean.
Good last long run for Boston. That's the way
it's awesome.
Fine, yeah.
Love that race.
And I'm also the co-race director of the Breakers Marathon in Newport, which is October 18th this year. This will be our 4th year. It's kind of a successor to the old Ocean State Marathon, but it's our own race.
Yeah.
And it runs through Newport and Middletown, beautiful scenic course. It's more along the lines of your traditional fall marathons now in the sense that we have a sponsor at Amica Insurance. It's very we have all the amenities, bells, and whistles. We try to make it a great experience for all runners.
That's good because I think for a while Rhode Island didn't have a marathon.
Right, that's correct.
And the 50 staters, couldn't get their 50 state in there.
Right, now there are 2. There's one in the spring now, the Cox Marathon, and then this one, which will be our 4th year. We're expecting a sizable turnout, and that's it. Those are the 2 races.
I qualified 1 year at the old Ocean State, the one that ran from Warwick to Providence, because it had like several different incarnations.
All right.
That was an awesome course. It was downhill with a tailwind the whole way, and until I turned the corner at like 22 or 23, and then we had a stiff headwind. And I remember tucking behind some guy and just. Like saying, you can do it the whole way, but I was actually using him to break the wind. end of the race, he turns around the chute and thanks me for helping him finish.
Right.
Like, hey, thank you.
And you said, when I said you can do it, I mean, you can break the wind for me. You can keep doing it. You can keep protecting me.
Yeah, so I'm giving him like a courage bit, Joe, so he'll stay on the course and I can draft him.
All right, well, listen, I'll let you get going, and I appreciate the chat.
Hey, thanks for all the ultra marathoning advice there. That was cool. I'll send you a pointer to the podcast, all right?
Okay, I wish you good luck. I'm sure it'll be a good experience for you.
All right. Later.
So long.
Here's today's quick tips.
Yeah, I got a tip for you. I got a tip for you right now. So we're talking about trails a lot and running ultras on trails and stuff. Let's talk a little bit about trail shoes. Get yourself some trail shoes. You can run in the woods with regular shoes. I did it for years. The issue is that the trail shoes fit a little snugger on the forefoot. They hold your foot better so your foot doesn't slide around as much, especially when it gets wet. Trail shoes have a much better water expelling properties so that you can run in them wet. They also tend to have a wider forefoot and a wider grip with bigger lugs. So when you get in the mud and the soft stuff, when you're stepping on rocks and logs, they have a better grip. The rubber tends to be softer. And I used to really like to take my trail shoes up to Quebec City with me because when it was negative 450 degrees up there, which it used to get, I could still, my regular running shoes, my carbon rubber ones, would get hard as rocks, but my trail shoes would be just about perfect. They tend to have a little bit of a lower ride, and they tend to have a big bumper on the front, so if you kick something, you don't dent your toe. They tend to have that rubber that wraps around the front. So get yourself a good pair of trail shoes. You don't need it for just running on dirt roads, but if you're going to be out where there's roots and rocks and slippery trees and stuff, you need to get some of those. You know what I'm saying? So that's it, man. I'm just going to roll right into this. That's it. Episode 16 in the can. I don't know who I'm interviewing this week. I'll have to figure it out. I was trying to find some women. Still, I have a dearth of women. I guess I am a misogynist old fart. So there you go. But I got some tunes for you. I got a song for you here, and you're going to like this song. It's pretty cool. It's called Snail Trail, and it's by Heavenly. And, of course, it's from that PodSafe Music Network at music.podjo.com. Go over there, spend the 99 cents, buy the song, help out a struggling artist so they can buy their ramen noodles and tuna fish to survive another day. And I'll see you guys out there, man.
podcast for all your running needs.